Calvin Gilfillan, it's good to have you. I think I've been behind many microphones in conversation with you over the past 30-odd years. It's good to have you in a new studio.
Wonderful, Clarence, and good morning, and it's wonderful to see you on the other side again. We've had many wonderful times. I'm thinking of this time of the year, of the Titis Bay Lang Tit Festival, Jazz Festival. But it's wonderful to speak to you, probably in my last professional home, the 367 years old Castle of Good Hope, and I've said 10 years in common. I have 10 years in common. I'm there for a decade now.
Is it a decade?
And I can't believe it.
Yeah.
It's just... Whew, like that, too.
I know you've been like CEO, but you're activist mostly. How do you merge something that is like kind of very straight with your activism?
Yeah.
Because CEO is about money, right? It's about accounting for budgets, is it not?
Yeah, not if you look at my salary, what you could check at the end of the month in this one. No, I think this one was a calling, Clarence. It was not, I don't think it was a CEO, like in the previous time when I was head of tourism and in Mpumalanga. I mean, those were cozy government jobs, but this one is a calling. I think somehow history has, thrown in former anti-apartheid political activists into a space that is like against whatever is fought and stand for. So in 1990, when we released Mandela on the Grand Parade, I was standing with my back to the space that I would like 30, 40 years later will occupy. And there were SADF, South African Defense Force soldiers waiting for us to make one little mistake on the day of the release of Mandela. So those two, armed colonial conquests, apartheid and freedom associated with the release of Mandela and the political prisoners and banning of political organization coming together. And now in my mind and in my professional mind and my social spirit, I have to, almost manage all of that and deal with all of that, but also democratize heritage and bring it to the people.
Democratize heritage. That's very interesting. Before we get into that democratization, Spooky Plek.
Yeah.
Are they ghosts?
You see, I was in the office of the governors. You know, every governor after Jan van Riebeeck and generals sat in that office. So a lot of the legislation that we're dealing with now, apartheid and colonial legislation, were written in that office.
Okay.
So I sat there for the first 3 years.
That's your office, right?
Yeah.
Context. Okay.
Yeah, that big office.
Yeah.
And then, but the governor sat in that office. And when people come there, they say, but can't you see what I see? In the window, they say there's a lady weeping. And I said, no, I can't see that. But what it did do was for me to move out of that office. I don't believe in ghosts. But every 10th visitor tells me there's something in there. And maybe
if you don't believe in ghosts, you can't see it.
I'm no cosmological attuned as you are, Clarence.
I believe in everything. Let me not say I believe in everything. And I believe in the spirit world as well. But have you not heard any strange sounds? Because everybody that I've spoken to that's done a stint in the castle say there is extra normal stuff happening.
Yeah, no, voidism is quite good because I make sure that I'm not there at 12 o'clock at night.
Okay, I got you.
So there was this.
So there's nothing that you've actually experienced.
So on Malema's Monday, there was the Nando's International had their function there. And I deliberately avoided that thing because I know it will go into the night.
Okay. Okay, so you purposely, but the rest of your colleagues?
Yeah, they tell stories. There's this artist, a beautiful artist, she does beautiful work. She worked there one night and one of these big doors went open and there was no wind. And you know the castle doors, you've been to the castle, they are big, massive doors. And she said, the door just opened. And I said, no, but Lizelle, you were probably asleep or whatever. No, she said, and she closed it, she said, and she just prayed and they left her alone. She finished the painting.
Interesting. And you have such stories regularly or what?
Yes, we have now a follower, global following of castle and castles around the world and haunted spaces around the world.
Oh, are you there? Are you?
No. They form unions and whatever, and they have cameras actually.
Yes.
Trying to snap these things, and they point out to you. I say, no, but that's dirt on your camera. They point out to you,
shadow or something.
Whatever. And, yeah. and they say,
so you've got cameras like.
We don't have the cameras. They bring it.
Yes.
To so prove to us.
They've done that.
Yes, they've done that.
And they claim to have
they
proven.
They claim to see it and it's online. Okay. Even.
So just give us the history. So this was a refreshment station that the yeah. Dutch decided to have. It was the busiest sea route, strategically located geographically between Europe and the Spice, yeah. The Spice Islands, wherever they traded.
The East.
In the East. That is what happened. And they consolidated their presence here, the Dutch, because of the presence of fresh water. Is that correct?
The Khamisa, as you would know, the link, the Khamisa. Yes. And so yesterday, just to bring it to the present, I had people, about 40 Canadian student teachers there, and they went into the Khamisa. And incidentally, I also met 6 professors from America, African Americans. They were almost 10 times more clever than us.
Yes.
And so they were talking about this, and I told them the Khamisa story, and they were fascinated by it. The metaphor, yes. but physically, that you get salt water, you get brackish water, and you get sweet water. Yes. So the Khamisa is sweet water.
Yes.
And I told them that there are 2 rivers running underneath the castle, and that is the primary reason people after 6 months after being on this west-east route, they had to drink this sweet waters, but more metaphorically also, they had to, they had to taste the population here, the women, the fruit, whatever. So that's why I'm saying Khamisa is not only literally speaking water, it is taking more than water. And what comes after that is history, as we're saying.
Yes.
But that's a defining moment. And also, you see all these buildings here where you are. These were all sea.
Yes.
So the seawater literally went up to the castle.
Yes.
And the sweet water behind the castle walls.
Yes.
So the Khamisa coming together.
I'm absolutely fascinated by it. I'm also upset by it because people suggest that history started when that castle was built.
No.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Somebody pointed out the water. There was trade from what?
There were settlements.
1200s.
There were settlements there. Yeah. For instance, one of the Khoi captains, Gogosua, I think, had a settlement exactly where the castle is located. So it means
is that the first force removal?
If you say so. But you contradict yourself because say you were trade long before that. So there might have been other settlements which were displaced because there were castles before that castle. There was Van Riebeek's castle in fact, directly opposite where Mandela was released, there was Van Riebeek's castle. And then there was a sand castle.
Hold on, where was Madiba released?
So Madiba was released from my hometown in Paul, but then the release ceremony, so to speak, was at the Grand Parade.
Yes.
So at the Grand Parade, there's the city wall. On the city wall, there is this podium where Mandela's statue is. And Mandela is looking into that big, monstrous statue in front of him.
Yes.
And behind that man is the foundation of the original...
Of the first
castle. The first castle. If you look,
was
you can
that
see
Van Riebeek's castle?
That was Van Riebeek's castle. Everyone after that came to my castle.
Yeah, but was that like a castle while they're building the big one?
That castle was... the Europeans underestimated the climatic condition of the Cape. So they built it with like clay and sand and inferior material. So Van Riebeek's castle was always on shaky ground. Another metaphor. And so when they realized it, they ordered, the VOC ordered a more permanent and steadier one. And that's about, 200 meters from there?
Okay.
They built this castle.
And that was built in the 1700s?
1666, to be exact.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long did it take? Are we talking
15 years.
We're talking your castle?
Yeah, yeah.
Completed in?
In 1679. Yeah. So it makes it 367 years old. Yeah.
Apparently, architecturally, it's still one of the best examples of 17th century castles, quote unquote.
I've visited a few in Sri Lanka and in
So you're castle boffin now, okay.
No, but it is in terms of, again, the metaphors and the symbolism. It's the way that the symbol of of white civilization has been maintained. Because if you look at the SADF, the old South African Defense Force, and the old Cape Colony, the insignia and the emblems and whatever, they use the castle, the outline of the castle, as that. Mm. So it means that you will invest to look after that castle. So it's true, but it's also false. Because if it was left to ruin, it would have been the same as other castles.
My question to you, how do you democratize culturally a bastion of colonialism? But I'm going to put that question to you.
Yeah.
It is argued, we're talking about the castle of Good Hope. And the CEO, Calvin Gilfillan, is here. We're talking Heritage Half Hour. Regularly look through a microscope at some of the issues that constitute our history, some of the spaces, places, and people that have contributed to it. And over 350 years, the Castle of Good Hope has been standing in that particular space. People have argued that from there an offensive was led to rob people of their land and everything on it and under it, that it is a sad past that it represents. You suggesting something more exists there. Calvin, let us into your mind.
I think that's right, and it links us to my statement on the democratization of the castle. So if you look at five, say, six, 7 years back, the Roads Must Fall, Fees Must Fall movement, when the full frontal attack on both the symbolism of colonialism, but also physical elements of colonialism, like imperialism, like the roads must fall, etc.
Like the castle.
Yeah, like the castle must fall. In fact, there was a movement, Castle Must Fall, and we engaged them. And what was in my favor is that I come from a field of political activists with Dennis Goldberg, what is his name? And quite a few political activists, former political activists, who were more matured and had an inclusive and still a radical, but a more inclusive way of looking at that. So we were saying, if you remove something completely, and in that space capitalism takes over and there is a big hotel rising up there, what is the purpose then of us having these difficult discussions? The Robben Island is another case in point. Mm. So if you take that away, if you don't let people come there and deal with the difficult arguments, because remember, a lot of the history, even in the physical landscape, has been removed, suppressed, or silenced. So if you don't have young minds and older minds getting together, almost at the gravestone of armed colonial conquest, how do you make that alive? How do you make history alive? Already we have at school a declining history numbers. People don't want to talk about history and heritage. There's this focus on the STEM and people don't talk about that. So from the beginning, coming from tourism and coming from education, was to say, this is a very difficult part of our past. We have focused on the first two decades of our democracy, only what apartheid did wrong to us. But we forgot about what colonialism done wrong to the first people who arrested them, to Otsumau, to Doman, to all of that. So if you move on, there will not be a platform to tell this story. So on Saturday, for instance, we will bring Oma Katrina. Oma Katrina is the last Ngu. Ngu is one of these the last of the San speakers.
Yes.
Oma Katrina lost her brother, was the second one. She will be speaking there about that colonial past. So you almost take a platform away from the people to deal with colonial past. And we know if you suppress the truth, it will explode in your face. So that's the purpose behind it. So we have people from kindergarten, older people, university professors, people from Canada, indigenous people from Canada, come and debate those global lessons that we have to learn around these places of oppression and of repression and of exclusion.
So do you agree it symbolizes oppression then?
Yes.
Okay, you do
That's the starting point. Okay. And then we say, okay, what was the anatomy of that oppression? Because we have a version of that oppression that says that the 1710 smallpox epidemic kill out the koi, in the koi koi.
No, but
which is wrong. Which
there's
is,
an argument for genocide.
Yeah, there's genocide, but there's also what happened is the what was dictated from the castle was that they give it, they were given land to the Freiburgers. Freiburgers put up fences, disallowing the cattle of the koi to get to the waters, and that killed the koi. Well, so, well, if you don't have that, some tangibility, how would you be able to convince people that it was like that?
I'm chatting to Kelvin Gilfillan, Castle of Good Hope CEO. It's our heritage half hour, focusing on 350 years of castle history. You're welcome to wade into the conversation, 0725671567. That's the WhatsApp number. Call 0214460567. My forefathers were the koi. My forefathers were also the slaves who were locked up in that castle in chains. My forefathers were also the colonialists. yeah, it's a question that I throw in all the time. And maybe around the castle, some reconciliation in my own mind can happen. Is that the aim?
One of the aims. So yesterday, these African American professors asked me, you know, where are you from? So they then say, oh, why didn't you have a Muslim name? So I said, no, my forefathers were koi. My other forefathers were Dutch and English person. That's why I'm looking like an Indian person. So yes. So there is the genes of reconciliation sits within us because we are so mixed.
Responsibility.
We are so mixed as global people. And if we realize that, and you can't edit, like today people, what do the people do? They edit you out, or they dish you, or they unfriend you. You can't unfriend the Dutch heritage in you.
Cancel. You're going to get with the
language. Cancel.
Amy helping us with the language.
Thank you, Amy. You can't cancel your Dutch heritage or your Khoi heritage or whatever.
Exactly.
So deal with it because it's in you. It will stay in you. It will stay in your grandchildren. It will stay in there. So at least we have the opportunity as this generation coming from such a difficult past to employ the tools that we picked up during apartheid and colonialism and speak about that and find personal reconciliation and then we will global reconciliation.
Yeah. Assaults on the indigenous people, assaults on the slaves that were brought in, also assaults launched from that castle during the apartheid days.
Yeah.
The Saracens would operate from there. They would go in and quell the protests. Yeah. It just has so much bad history there. But just tell us about the flags. Why are all the flags of this various colonial eras still kind of billowing in the southeaster?
It's not there anymore. In fact, the first question the journalist must ask me, why did you take off the flags? Where's the flags now? I said, no, I'm just joined here. I picked this thing up in the media and I can understand why there was a debate around that.
Yeah.
This is an official, this is a key, national key point. This is official government building. Why would you still put colonial flags on? Do you see in Britain there's a flag of
Westminster?
Whatever. Do you think there's their flag? And that was the argument. And we took those flags into the museums, because there you can interpret it. But if it hangs out there, and years.
It was apparently the only building in the whole South Africa that
it used to be.
So it's done with that.
And it's not my legacy. I won't claim the thunder. It was gone, but I still had to explain it to people why it was taken down. The poles are still there, but there's no flags on the poles. And that's part of our history.
Yeah.
Removal is part of our history.
Yeah. Yeah, and ultimately, the cosmopolitan city that we became is because of that water source.
Yeah.
People getting together around that water source because it's water that you need to drink. And humans being humans around the water source. And as a result, you and I are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the story?
And we bring that story there. Some people bring it more in colloquial language. Mm. Obviously I'm also an academic, so I try to be, but you summarized it right. Yeah. So it was, if you are, 60 men, you've been.
It is 10:33. Welcome to Views and News through till 12 o'clock. We're going to wrap up with Kelvin Gilfillan, Castle of Good Hope CEO. I'm going on leave for a couple of days, so my brain is slowly but surely, just gearing down. But Joe in Brackenfell, Joe, you want to speak to Kelvin? Go ahead.
Firstly, Tawela's Gangans to yourself and to Kelvin.
Good morning, Bia. Good morning, Bia Joe.
Yeah.
Is this Joe Issa?
I must say. I must say that, you know, Calvin is the first person that I've met to assist me in engaging my indigenous roots. And he is immensely passionate about our roots, and our young people can learn so much from him. And I think we need to not shy away, but we need to promote the role that our people played significantly in Kamisa. And our people don't even know that the correct name of Table Mountain is Orikwagu, mountain flowing to the sea. So, Calvin, keep up the good work, and thank you for always being there for us as people. God bless.
Thank you, Joe Iso, and such a big champion of this inclusive history that I think is finding traction. It's when we repurpose nearly these things that have represented something that we can find that inclusive history. Still, I think that inclusive history is the fracture that we have in society. There's a voice note in. It is about a castle, the castle needing an upgrade. And I see Jenny and Obbs also spoke to that in a WhatsApp. Let's take a listen to the voice note.
Morning. Could you ask your guest, I know it's Heritage Hour, but I went to the Good Hope Castle last year with some Canadian visitors, and I was really shocked at the state of the castle, and I was embarrassed by the staff who were not well dressed. They were not attending to their work. They were sleeping behind the counters. So how do you expect people to enjoy the heritage and learn about it when such a huge part of our heritage is really neglected? It's filthy, and it just seems like nobody cares about it. Thank you.
Calvin?
I have been, and I know Jenny, I've engaged her personally. And as you say, it's last year, so she must come again and look at the castle. And of course, what people does, Clarence and listeners, they look at the socio-economic problem at the corner of Castle and Strand Street and judge the castle accordingly. What is it? About 50 homeless people staying there. But we are in discussion with the City of Cape Town and the Department of Public Works to deal with that issue in a humane manner, in Human Rights Month, in a humane manner. If you look at last week with the departure, with the Cape Town cycle tour, what is it? Are they calling it now? What used to be called the Argus cycle tour.
Just cycle
used
tour.
Used to start there, and it's coming back now. And you know, David Bellas is is a Democrat. He's not only events person is making, so we're working with him to look at how do we deal with that, so that you match the what I almost call middle class, upper middle class expectations of society or of what, and the poorest of the poor, the ultra marginalized, and find a middle road around that. So that's the issue.
So is there enough budget to keep that castle in good nick as we wrap up?
Our part, I do think so.
Okay, and that budget comes from the Department of. Works.
No. Public Works does some, but the fence is paying money over to Public Works to do the works, 200,000 and beyond. And you can't do that every day. I mean, we are demand for electricity, water, housing. So if you have to prioritize a heritage building like this versus the needs of society, there's a priority list. So there is enough to go by and look after the castle.
A lot of management in the Department of Defense as well. Too many chiefs there. You know, if you're salary bill, then I understand. Yeah, we don't have money to do the castle.
But the money is going to the DPW to do the work. And there's a cycle how you manage this. There's also National Heritage Resources Acts. You can't just go in there with a paintbrush and a hammer and whatever, do it. There is a process. And in fact, today we're signing a heritage agreement with the South African Heritage Resources Agency after my interview to up our games, both our games around looking after this, because at least this democratic state did not totally throw that colonial things away.
It's no more a place of just pomp and ceremony. It's a place for deep reflection.
Yes.
That is the castle. Yeah. And I think under your on your watch, a lot of development has happened on that front. When I see people going in there, meaningful experiences in the castle, reconciling an ugly past. But it's an important part of our reconciliation into a future.
Yeah.
That is better.
Yeah, and in a sense, the tangibility, the rough surfaces, the old look and feel, juxtaposed to the pain and suffering and the transformation and democratization, is important because you have to show. Because if we have allowed that thing to ruin, it, you know, imagine what Jenny and the other people would have said about that.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Calvin, thank you for this opportunity.
It's a pleasure.
Lekker chatting with you.
And wonderful.
Yes.
And enjoy your,
is palpable.
Enjoy your days off.
Langaram. In the hot springs. I'm looking
thank
forward
you.
To
thanks
it.
To your listeners.
Thank you, Calvin Gilfin. We're going to be chatting to Mulana Suleiman Ravatis in Johannesburg. He's with Radio Islam International. He is ideally suited to speak on radio about Ramadan. So those of us who don't practice Islam, but you know, in my particular instance, some of my family's Muslim, some of my family's Christian, but that's like some of my family's Afrikaans, some of my family's English. That is the Mengelmus that I am. I'm fascinated by all kinds of religions, and it's good when we understand each other. So that's the opportunity. I think for our Islam listeners, you would, of course, understand the conversation completely. But I most certainly want to understand the things that are important to you, and that conversation we're going to have next.